Okay. We talked at the end of the last session about love. We kind of ended on that question. Is reaching the lost with the gospel something that you love doing just because of the way you're put together, or is it something that grows in you over time as you grow in your relationship with Christ? And the answer is yes and yes, both. If you have a Bible and you want to turn to Revelation 12, starting in verse 10, we're going to find three keys to conquering a culture that is at war with us. And it is a culture of darkness, and it's a culture of hate. It's the opposite of love. Revelation 12:10 says, "Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, 'Now, salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come, for the accuser of the brethren who accused them before our God day and night has been cast down, and they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to death.'" When John the Apostle wrote these words because of the revelation he received on the Isle of Patmos, he was describing you. He was describing every believer in this room. This is your testimony. This is your biography. And so the three keys that he names, which are our keys for dealing with darkness now, is we must be born again. I know people don't like hearing that, but that's the truth. There, you know, Nicodemus asked the question. He knew the law backwards and forwards. He sneaks in the garden at night because he's terrified of his friends and asks the question. Jesus just says it. You have to be born again. There is no other way. Only the blood of a perfect sacrificial lamb overcomes the darkness of the demonic. Victory starts at the cross. The cross is the key. And again, because we don't like talking about the negatives, we don't like talking about darkness and demons and hell and the consequences of sin. We don't have to even like to call sin sin. So we avoid all, well, we're the ones who know what sin is. We're the ones who have had a revelation of how bad we are. And, you know, we're not doing each other any favors to try to help each other find ways of coping with our guilt. That's one of the things that Dan's program, when he was taking his psych courses, I remember hearing, sitting in on one of his seminars, you know, this is way back in 1977, and the gay teacher was telling the classroom that it's not only against the law, but it's also unkind to try to tell someone who is same-sex attracted that there's anything wrong with them, and that it's unethical as a practitioner to do that, because that's not true. Well, yes, it is true. And when you try to give people medication and methodologies to help them quash their God-given conscience so they can no longer tell the difference between right and wrong, you're condemning them to darkness. We don't want to help people by helping them feel good about their sin. We want them to find the way to eternal life, which is the blood of the Lamb, to be born again and have those sins and that guilt washed away. Like Mary Magdalene, she loved much because she had been forgiven much. She didn't go to Jesus, weep at his feet, wipe his feet with her tears and say, "Please tell me how to accept my prostitution. I have a problem and I can't get over the guilt. Please help me, you know, conquer my..." No. He set her free from that lifestyle. So she was free indeed. We must testify, number two. We have to speak the truth in love about Jesus and tell his story. Dan said something really important in the last session. when we testify and we give testimony about our lives, we have to get to the gospel. We can't just keep going on and on and on about me. We can start there, but we have to end at the cross, because it's almost back to front. I have no story. There is no testimony. There is no happy ending for me without the cross. When I was, the third point, let me just say this quickly. We must not love this life more than the life to come. We must not love ourselves more than we love Christ. If we love our lives so much that we are going to hide our new life from others to preserve my reputation or to distance myself from criticism, then we love ourselves more than we love him. And he loved his life not, he was willing to give his life for us. Greater love has no one than this, than he laid down his life for his friends. For the joy that was set before him, what was that joy? It was you. He had you in his face when he let them nail him to the cross. That was a joy for him. He was happy to die for you. He was eager to suffer because he knew all of us were going to make it if he did. All of us were going to join him one day. That's what made him happy. That's what gave him joy. And that joy can be ours. We can experience the same love, the same drive to survive the criticism by keeping the cross in our crosshairs and seeing beyond it to that glorious day when we see all those people in heaven that made it because of your witness, because you told them the truth about the cross. And Mary Magdalene, she had been forgiven much, so she loved much. And sometimes I feel like if you don't really have an impactful revelation of the cross, you don't really realize what he did for us. What kind of love it must have taken for him to go through all that rejection, criticism, accusation. He was God. He knew who he was. And every time he opened his mouth about it, there was somebody who was just in his face, you know, picking up the stones, off with his head, let's get rid of him. And you know, we haven't come to that, hallelujah, in this country, but he went through all of that for us. So we need to be able to tap into what kind of love is that? That's part of our inheritance, not just a get-out-of-jail-free card, you know, you're not going to burn someday, but the joy of living in his love now. We were talking earlier about all these kids are being told, oh, you have a mental, you know, your mental health is at risk, you know, because of COVID, and so if you're having a bad day, then, you know, we'll give you a pill and a note and you can go home. We're just absolutely crippling the younger generation by not teaching them how they can overcome. We're living in a fallen world. This life is full of suffering. Let's tell the truth so that the suffering can subside and be replaced with the joy and the love of God. We don't have to wait till we get to heaven. But that's one of the three keys. We love not our life unto death. And when you can get beyond your fear and step over that invisible line of persecution and say what you want about me, I can take it because I've been forgiven. I can forgive you. I can keep going. And I actually have a wonderful testimony. When I was kind of packed, well, I won't go into all the details, but I ended up going from California to Montgomery, Alabama in 1972. I was the only person in town that didn't wear a dress as a woman, as a girl. I didn't own a dress. You didn't wear dresses in California. you didn't do the ripped jeans, but it, there was, you know, the low rider bell bottom thing going on. And I was so from out of town. First of all, I didn't have a drawl, but I was tan and I was unsaved. And I went to a little tiny Bible college by mistake. I was the only unsaved person on the campus, including the janitor. Everybody, every student, every teacher, every staff member was born again, and I was not, clearly. And I got, I was first there, got my keys into the dorms. I was the first one in the room. It was two on one side, a Jack and Jill bathroom, and then two on the other side. So I had three roommates and me. So I when I was introduced to all of them, they were kind of like, whoa, what is this? I don't think they knew any people that were unsaved. I was probably the first sinner they actually ever got close to, you know. And they were all so squeaky clean. Oh, my goodness. They were just so innocent. And I was so done. I was like 60 years old. And just, I had wasted my life. And they figured out real quick that I didn't know anything about the Bible. Our first day of class, we had to take Bible. So I had to get a Bible at the bookstore, and I took it to class. And the teacher said, okay, class, everybody open up your Bibles to Acts chapter 1. So I'm like, Acts, okay, that's an A. It's a big book, probably like a dictionary. So Acts is probably at the beginning somewhere, you know. Genesis, okay, well, that means beginning. I can get that. So then I'm going to the table of contents. And the teacher comes over to my desk, and he kind of puts his hand on the desk, and he goes, can anybody help Ms. Bates find the book of Acts? She doesn't seem to know where it is. Well, he was right, but that was cruel. That was not the way to teach the only sinner in the room how to love God. But those three roommates of mine, Cornelia Tidwell, Susan Booth, and Jane Anderson, they didn't just tell me about Jesus. They lived Jesus. They prayed for me. They cried over me. I was cruel and merciless to them. I persecuted those three girls for 3 months. I swore. They never heard a swear word in their life until their roommate showed up. I didn't feel bad about it at all. Because I was so hard-hearted. They'd get on their knees at night next to my bed. Oh God, please save Nori. She's such a sinner. Oh God, she's gonna burn. She's gonna burn. And I'm like, get off, you know, kicking them. And it was bad. I persecuted them. And they were just trying to love me. They didn't even know me. But because they paid the price, they lived the cross, they reached me with the love of God. Two of them are in heaven. And when I saw Jane a couple of years ago at one of the funerals of the other two, and I told her, you know, some of my testimony, she couldn't believe it. She said, Nora, I'm shocked you're still alive. And then she finally said, after we had lunch, I feel guilty that you've done more for Jesus than I have. I said, Jane, don't say that. I'd be dead without you. I have a crown because of you. And you are one of the people that gave me that crown. Give someone that kind of love. Love someone like that. Don't let their swearing and their rejection and their evil, wicked ways turn us off to their need for God. I will spend eternity praising Jesus and loving on them because they didn't give up on me. On the outside, I was rejecting them and the gospel. But on the inside, I was crying out, don't leave me here. Help me. Now, not everybody feels that way. It's not that way for everybody. But if you start at the cross and you get in touch with God's forgiveness for you, don't get so advanced in your theology that you forget you're just a child saved by grace. People need reality. They don't need theology. They don't understand it. These big words we use, you know? Tell them the story of Jesus and how his story became yours. There was someone that I was also introduced to shortly after that. I got to go to university in Heidelberg, Germany, and I was telling Lou this morning about the lady that ran the house I lived in was 32 members of her family had been killed by the Nazis. She was a Jew. Her dad was a Berlin lawyer. She was hidden in a friend's house for 3 days in the, you know those old Victorian houses that have this stairwell that goes up the middle like a corkscrew? In the top of the house, in the paneling of the stairwell, they had built shelves like library bookshelves. And this little six-year-old girl and her little tiny mom, Moogle, they lay on those two shelves while the Nazis ripped the house apart looking for them. And they didn't get found. How does a six-year-old lay 3 days and nights in a tomb in the dark? She ended up getting saved and going back to Germany in the 60s to run this program that I ended up in 1974. And her next door neighbor was the Minister of Armaments for the Third Reich, Albert Speer, who had spent 20 years in Spandau prison for war crimes. And she was one of his best friends, a Jew, a Christian, who forgave because of the cross, like Corrie Ten Boom. You know, these people should inspire us. Okay, so we're not living in a concentration camp. We're not Holocaust victims. We should use that for our benefit instead of letting it make us soft. But it was love. This is what Corrie said. Corrie Ten Boom. She overcame. Here's two quotes from her. Number one, the wonderful thing about prayer is that you leave a world of not being able to do anything and you enter God's realm where everything is possible. He specializes in the impossible. Nothing is too great for his almighty power. Nothing is too small for his love. Forgiveness is the key that unlocks the door of resentment and the handcuffs of hatred. It is a power that breaks the chains of bitterness and the shackles of selfishness. The opposite of love is self, not hate. We don't hate ourselves, we love ourselves. We love ourselves so much that we're willing to let other people suffer so we can be safe. That's not God's love. But we have to be careful about practicing the first and second commandment. Let's just read it really quick. Matthew 22, verses 34 through 39. Which is the first of all, a commandment of all? When the Pharisees heard that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together, and one of them, a lawyer, asked Christ the question, testing him, saying, "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" Jesus said to him, "You shall love." It's not a suggestion. It's not an option. It's not a technique, you know, try love. See. You shall love. It's a commandment like you shall not kill. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first, and this is the greatest command. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. So once that love of God has come into our lives at the cross, and we learn through his word how to hear his voice and obey him, then he tells us how to love others. How many of you found out that human love is way different from God's love? Our love has limits. It has boundaries. You know, it only goes so far, and then it caves. God's love never fails. But we cannot lose the order of love. Sometimes when we're ministering to couples who want to who want to end their marriage, I find myself caring more about the marriage than they do. You know, my parents divorced. I hate divorce. It's a violation of a vow to God. But if I want them to make it more than they want to make it, if I want to put more prayer and tears into it than they do, then it's not going to work. And I found the same thing. If I care more about people than I do about God, if I start to develop an attitude toward God because somebody I love has walked away from him and I'm trying to advocate for their sin at the judgment seat of, you know what I'm saying? Well, Lord, the world does that to us with our faith. Well, you can't say that. You don't know what's going on in their life. They start to criticize us to like Dan said, to shut us up. And we start doing that to God. Well, Lord, I know my son is a prodigal right now, but you know, and then we start making excuses for them. That's not love. Watering down the gospel, changing the testimony to accommodate the sinner is not love. We can't lose our love for God. First command. He has the first place, and it is a different kind of love. Our love with the Father is unique. It's based on he's holy. Your son isn't, I'm sure he's a great guy, but he's not holy, okay? He's not God. So we have to be careful as we intercede for and reach out to other people with the love of God in a fallen world where there's so much hostility against us. We have to be very, very careful that we don't start to alter our attitude toward God and his love to accommodate the sin around us. Making excuses for the sinner instead of keeping our commitment and our focus on the love of God. The love of God is first and foremost. And I'll end with this. One of my favorite verses, Psalms 119, verse 136. Rivers of tears gush from my eyes because people disobey your law. Why does that make me cry? Because I feel sorry for people? Yeah, I do. I don't want anybody to go to hell. And if you have lived hell on earth in this life and you find Jesus, you don't want that for anybody either, even a stranger, even someone who persecutes you. But if we really love them, we cry for them because they have lost their understanding that there is a God and he loves them. We cry because they disobey God, because they misread his purposes and his desire and his will for their lives. They think he's going to move in and start bossing them around. They don't know that he's going to save them from the flames, give them a life worth living, heal their broken heart, or their body, or both. We can tell them about his love. when we find out about it first at the cross. So tell him the truth.